The Articulate Coven is the original, unofficial podcast and fan community for Anne Rice's Interview with the Vampire and Anne Rice's Immortal Universe from AMC and AMC+. Welcome to The Articulate Coven. We are your hosts. I'm Joel.
I'm Ashley.
And we are The Articulate Coven. Ashley, welcome back. Thank you all for listening to us, and we're excited to continue our rewatch of the first season of Interview with a Vampire. If you're new to the show, we are the unofficial fan community and podcast for Anne Rice's Interview with a Vampire, The Mayfair Witches, those television series from AMC and AMC+. But also we cover the books, we cover the previous movies made from these series, and just sort of all of the Anne Rice fandom when we can. Currently, we are in the middle of a rewatch of season one. If you haven't seen Interview before, I would caution you that these discussions are probably going to include spoilers for the whole season overall. You can go back in our previous episodes and check out the episodes where we watched the show for the first time, and that way we're only going to be talking about what we've seen up to that point. We won't spoil things for you in those episodes. Ashley, what did you think of this episode, the third of season one, as we're getting into it? It's called Is My Very Nature That of the Devil?
Well, this is when our honeymoon ends. You know, this is the honeymoon phase of the relationship has passed, and now the shit's going to start hitting the fan.
That's a good way to put it. That's a very good way to put it. So the title of this one is My Very Nature That of the Devil, directed by Keith Powell. It was written by Rollin Jones, the showrunner, Anne Rice, and Hannah Moscovich. Hannah's we're a big fan of her work over this season and excited to have her back. I believe she's in the writing team for season two as well.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Louis begins to interrogate Lestat on the larger meaning of vampiric life. Lestat is distracted by a new face and Louis's morality. Daniel begins to question holes in the story. Louis is distracted by an old friend while he struggles with the question of if his very nature is that of the devil. That's our template for this episode. Let's dive right into it. Ashley, I am once again just so excited and blown away by the production levels on this show. The show opens in the square. I think that conversation, by the way, is one of the best of the season. It really showcases Lestat's curiosity and yet also his like obtuseness and blindness, but also it's just a lovely setting, them on the park bench there, you know, in a lovely New Orleans square in the middle of the night.
Misty.
Yeah.
It's so pretty. And they're pretty. And I love their chemistry so much. And we talked about this when we did the first watch, but I just love how physically comfortable they are together. Mm. It's just so nice to see like the proximity that they have to each other and how at peace they are in, you know, in that space together. It's very cool.
You know, I think one of the biggest successes for a show that was a big hit last year, the adaptation on HBO of The Last of Us, the video game.
One of the
big successes of that show was the physical and emotional chemistry as well. But they literally had physical chemistry. They felt like two real human beings that had been on the road together, our two leads. In that case, not romantic chemistry at all. It's more like it's a father-daughter relationship. But still, I do think too often, especially in film, this is the case, I think, but it happens a lot in TV too. You cast for the names, you cast for, you know, oh, this is the hot person right now. But like, if they don't match up with the rest of your characters, I think there will always be a mismatch. You know,
but I think sometimes same-sex chemistry can be tricky on camera if the actors aren't committed to everything 100%.
Yes, yes. Although, I'll say this. Of all the things wrong with the Interview with the Vampire movie from 94, and there are a lot in retrospect that did not get right, but I do think the chemistry between our two leads was pretty solid. You and I have talked about it previously. The chemistry between Antonio Banderas and Brad Pitt was better.
Yeah, absolutely, 100%.
Although, I think, aren't there some rumors that Brad was depressed during the filming of that and like had stopped bathing, so maybe he stank all the time? That's why people didn't want to rub up on him.
Well, yeah. I mean, this is before Tom Cruise is the Tom Cruise that we know now, too. So, I don't know. I just can't imagine how strange the that film set must have been.
It was probably a weird one. Now, I mean, Tom Cruise also did Magnolia and Tropic Thunder and Eyes Wide Shut, so I think he's used to some strange film
sets.
That's
very true. Very good point.
But this opening scene, though, the conversation there is fantastic. So it does showcase a lot of Lestat's personality, but also it highlights again, though, Louis's continual search for meaning, for purpose.
Well,
it's
and
that question of who is Louis.
Right. And in this scene, I think something that I kind of feel like is sort of missing from Louis is the curiosity about the vampirism. I know that it's in the lines and I know that we're hearing him say that, but it doesn't feel as he's invested in that as much as what's going on around them in the moment and at the time.
I think
so. Like
I
his great
think...
curiosity of what's else is out there, what other vampires might be out there. That's something for me that's like a little bit lacking, and I'm looking forward to seeing that sort of resolved in season two.
I think that's fair. I do wonder if that's not actually Jacob Anderson's lack of interest in that aspect of it. You know,
oh, it could be.
I really do. I get the parts of this character that Jacob is on fire to play are the duality about his sexuality and gender, the, you know, that questioning of himself, the
and
morality of taking
done.
Human life. I think that's the biggest one for him. And the nature of vampirism and like where it comes from, that does fit into that, right? Because if vampirism has a greater purpose in the universe overall, well, I think that would make sense to Louis. But that doesn't... I wonder if maybe he knows he's not going to get that sort of answer from Lestat.
Right.
Like, it's clear Lestat is not a person who thinks in those... or at least at this point,
Louis,
he doesn't think in those big terms.
Louis' human life, or his, like, human version, his front in the show, is so much more interesting than his front in the book, you know? Like, he was a plantation owner, and it was... Plantation owner, and it was just kind of living that life... But this is just so much more exciting, you know, like.
Well, and it lasts longer too. In the
yeah.
in the book, I can't think off the top of my head exactly how long it is, but it's not even a matter of years, I don't believe, before the slaves basically force them off the plantation and they move to town where they live more anonymously, you know.
Right, and that whole section's kind of skipped.
Yeah. Well, I mean. I keep thinking about Tom's line. I think it's in the finale, you know, yo, two-tone, that is, where he's talking to Claudia. But like at that
oh,
point,
yes.
he's been in relationship with Lestat and Louis for 25 years plus, you know, and there's no one, even Lestat's bankers, I don't think, are hinted at that they, you know, he keeps the same one around for more than, you know, a few years at any given point. So, yes, the human interaction here is a lot more heightened over the book version. But anyway, it's just interesting there that both of those, all of those traits are showcased in this one conversation. And as we've discussed before, they even bring in some of the artful language, too.
Oh, yeah.
Lestat's got this great line. Every one of them is capable of abomination, even the ones worthy of admiration. I'm just like, oh, boy, that's good. That's good. That's good
well,
writing.
Well, it is. It's one of those things like never meet your heroes. Mm. You know, everyone's an asshole in some way.
Yeah. Well, I mean, think about some of the things that are coming out currently about Stephen Hawking, for instance. You know, like... I think that's a perfect example of that. Like, let's don't look too closely at any of these. I mean, Oppenheimer,
right.
you know, like the father of the atomic bomb, and yet, like, really, really a creep in a bunch of different ways.
He was real horny.
Yeah. So Louis
scientists
says,
are horny too, Joel.
Louis says, by the way, here with Lestat, that he doesn't want to kill humans anymore, I should say. And this is like in the 1920s, and yet he does occasionally kill people for another 80 years. Is that all Armand's influence? Does Armand string him along into the continual killing? Does Louis continue to have this fight with himself for 80 years? Is it powerful blood that eventually allows him to forego the human life? Or maybe
something
I don't know.
I think is really interesting in this episode is that they really start playing with the fact that memory is unreliable.
Mm.
And we really see Daniel questioning Louis a lot more vehemently, you know, when it comes to talking about, was it raining? did it rain that night?
Well, even at the very beginning.
Oh, fuck, I can't remember.
He plays the clips and he goes back and forth and he's like, here's the 70s, here's today.
Right.
Here's you talking about Lestat then. You know, he was a sow's ear, nothing fine could come from him. And here he's saying that he wrote the Wolverine Blues, you know, et cetera, et cetera. I do love, though, Louis' pushback on that. The tapes are an admitted performance. This is the more nuanced portrayal. And what he's saying there is, I was pissed at Lestat in the 70s when I, you know, told you these stories. Again, like, our timelines are still confusing to me because he loses Lestat, as far as we know, currently in the 40s. Why is he still mad at him 30 years later? So much so that he would tell a false version of the story. Why now is he happy with him and telling a, as he says, a more nuanced portrayal? But also, we still know that Lestat does things in Louis' portrayal of this that don't seem for us to be in the character of Lestat. So it's layers on layers.
I think it's going to be interesting how things shake out with Claudia in season two, you know, and I think that that's going to depend on how angry Louis is going to be.
Yes.
With Lestat.
Yes.
And obviously, we know that Armand has somehow bewitched him into not remembering what was done to Claudia, or he doesn't know what was done to Claudia, or it was all blamed on Lestat.
Yeah, I don't know. And that's the most intriguing question to me is, like, whose version of this story did we even get this season?
You know, what are we going to get next season?
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so I love... Louis lights up the little fire on the side table here with his mind, it seems anyway. Do you think that Louis actually has the fire gift, or is Armand off screen doing that little trick for him
to
freak with Daniel? I thought about that for the first time in this watching.
There's so many more questions now. And then he scolds him for, like, lingering.
Oh, okay, so even before that, like, literally, so he lights the thing on fire, and then Daniel asks a question, and Louis, in reference to his and Lestat's situation, says it was rigged to burn, and I'm like, are you telling us that was a magic trick that you just did? Like, you had, where's the lighter fluid coming from, Michael? Like...
In my pocket, I
had it. I don't know, man. Like, all of that struck me as strange there. Okay. There's a line when they're having the conversation about your criminal biscuit. Okay. He gets that way when he's hungry, in reference to Louis. And yes, that's true. Louis gets pissy because he's starving himself. Lestat, though, is pissy in this episode because he's been starved too. He's horny.
Right.
And they're both denying basic needs. They're not talking about it, or, you know, they're lying to themselves and each other about it. And it just raises the temperature on their entire fucking relationship. Like, both of them, it drives me crazy. Like, this is like one of those situations where just write each other a post-it note.
You know, I would say throw back a couple of drinks and have a conversation, but I mean, I guess they're not drinking much.
No. And then, of course, my favorite line, I think, of the whole season. Of course, of course, of course.
Of course.
As long as you come home to me, of course. He says it so many times. I love the poker matches. We've got another great poker match here. It makes sense in the story why they were discontinued. Obviously, Louis' relationship with the, you know, the white society at large sours here, and they basically bring it back in the finale to try to, you know, tie everything up. But, like, these are good moments, and it's interesting to watch his politicking and to see Lestat bounce off of that, to hear the different perspectives from the men, the way that Tom plays as if he is Louis' friend continually is, like, it's sparkling.
He's such a
all
dickhead.
Of it's, no, it's just all, this is wonderful. Like, this is exactly what you want from a, I think about, I'm rewatching Battlestar Galactica right now, the 2000s series.
Oh, yeah.
And they don't call it poker, but whatever the card game is that they play in the you know, the pilot's rec hall or whatever, very regularly in the game, those are in the show. Those are great scenes too. You get it's like the game is just an avenue or a vehicle to have conversations and share these feelings and things, which
Absolutely.
Is true in real
they
life, too.
They played poker on Next Gen, on Star Trek Next Gen.
Yes.
And then there was a poker episode of West Wing, too, that was really great.
Oh, that's a great one. Yes.
You know, yeah, it's like it's a great time episode. To see how people's minds work, you know, how your characters that you are interested in, that you like, see how they strategize. And, you know, it's always fun. And compete.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. So when we finally get to our actual dalliance for both of our boys here, I just want to point something out. Louis is just sitting and talking to his friend from childhood here in the bar that he owns. Lestat, meanwhile, is actually making out with a different party.
It's very true.
I mean, and giving Louis the eye the whole time, too.
Did Lestat dip into Jonah's mind?
You know, I don't know. I mean, you could see from across the room that they're interested in each other. I think it's like the way that Jonah looks at Louis is clear, but all I'm saying is Lestat crossed the line first and basically
we're not
dares
comparing
Louis
apples
to do it.
To apples.
Yeah. Now I will say this. Louis asks Jonah to go for a ride with him, and they both knew damn well what they were doing riding out there to the middle of nowhere in the bayou, whether it was raining
or
not.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we all know what we're doing if we go out in a car in the dark in the middle of the bayou.
Netflix and chill, Jonah?
Swamp and chill?
And okay, and you called this out earlier. About here is where we get the line, "You're lingering, Rashid," as he kind of chases Armand out of the room. Is Armand lingering because he's a little jealous of this story of some strange that Louis got 70 years ago too?
70 years ago.
I don't know. Strange, but well, longer than that.
It's so interesting watching it again with this lens of knowledge.
So Louis comes back and they do the non-makeup where they both ignore what the other one's done, talk about plans for the next day. But then Louis goes to his mama's house to see the girls. I want to ask you here, and I didn't think about it at all the first time that we saw this, but just watching it here, do we really think that Louis kicked the door of his mother's house in? Like, kicked it in all the way to the other end of the hallway. We've seen in the show so far a couple of moments where Louis has let his vampiric strength out, but it just seems so unlike the Louis of the books, and honestly, so unlike the Louis of this show, largely. I wonder if, again, that's not planted, altered, massaged how he ended his relationship with his family.
I think that's a really interesting thought, because this whole scene seemed to me less about Louis wanting to see his family to keep up appearances, or wanting to see his family because he feels like they expect that of them. It seemed very much more about Louis self-serving himself, you know, like, I want to still cling on to this part of this life. I still want to see my sister, even if I don't want to see my mom and my brother-in-law. I still want to enjoy this part of my life, even though it's pushing me away. So it's so much more about him and what he wants and less about what he thinks his family needs. His nieces are afraid of him.
I feel
they
like it's
run
even
from him.
Yeah, I feel like it's even worse than that, Ashley. I don't think he's even trying to keep up appearances or anything like that. I think he knows that Grace is maybe the only person on the planet that knows what he is and still accepts him anyway. You know, like Lestat
right.
only accepts him for what he can be. None of the rest of his human, friends and relationships accept him anymore for what he's become. But Grace just loves him unconditionally. And I think he's like a junkie who has that one, you know, family member who he knows he can always show up to, and they won't mind. They'll open the door.
Yeah, and they're always going to give you some money.
Yeah, even look the other way when you lock the bathroom door for a while, you know.
Yeah.
Whatever. And I think that's where he is. And it's he doesn't want any part of her children or her husband or even his mother at this point, who's forsaken him. But Grace, he can soak up a little bit of that unconditional love. And then when she's too busy... And honestly, it's not that she's too busy to give him that, but she wants to include him in her life. and he's not interested. I felt that so hard in this episode. I've got some people in my life who need my help and who need my attention and affection, but are not interested in being a part of or even really knowing about my life as it exists now. And that is an incredibly draining relationship to try to maintain.
Oh, it's hurtful.
Yeah.
It's a different way of being used that is just a real fucking bummer.
I mean, it's just as simple as, well, and how was your day? You know, and it never comes in there. It never comes in there. That's not what Louis is there for. It just struck me really hard in this episode. I'm glad he leaves. He doesn't need any babies. He doesn't break Mama's, neck or anything like that. But like, I don't know. I don't know if this one was real. And for a lot of us who are hoping in the eventual truth as this series continues to unfold, that the violence that comes later in this season is also not exactly as it happened, right? Like, there's a lot of us that are hoping that the things that Lestat does to Louis in a few episodes is not actually how it went down.
Right.
I think this moment, again, it gives me at least an optimistic sign that that's the correct reading. You know, that this Louis tale here is heightened for effect for some reason.
Yeah, absolutely. Showing like kind of the growing distrust of Louis in general that is happening throughout the city, throughout Storyville, with it. You know, just people starting to figure out that they're not aging and they are two dudes living together and everyone knows about it.
Yeah.
This episode is so much about like a simmering fire, like about to burst into flames. And I mean, it literally happens at the end of the episode when Storyville's on fire and he goes to rescue Claudia. But it's literally just a smolder through this whole episode, and it makes it so tense.
Yes. It's a pressure cooker was the thing that I kept thinking.
Yes.
It's like, hey, when's the can going to explode here in a minute? And yeah, it does.
Exactly.
You're right. It does eventually. Man, I just want to highlight again, because I do, in retrospect, I'm realizing how little Sam has on the page compared to Louis in this season. And yet, every time he gets a swing, boy, he really takes it. A German on their bayonets.
Oh my God, so funny. That whole scene is fantastic. Him playing the piano. Just, I feel like it's just this version of Lestat that I love so much. This like brash and fun and dangerous side of him that I love getting to see.
So Louis kills the alderman, which I think we were all expecting at some point, and
oh,
it's one of those moments
you.
Where you're
it was about damn time
sort of glad to see it. I love that,
and he plays with his food.
Yes, that's what I was gonna say. I love that this scene, and they do it a couple of other times too, they switch into almost like a slasher feel. And they did it early in episode one when Lestat take somebody in the alleyway or something. There's a great moment there, like the guy putting out the light and the lamps or something.
Oh yeah.
But same thing here. Like, we get to see a little bit of that, you know, slasher angling and camera angles and the way they edit it together. And you feel these vampires are lots of things, but they are dangerous. Like, primarily, they are dangerous.
Yeah, they are unnatural creatures that drink blood for a job, basically.
Well, and, you know, I said earlier, is it like Louis to have kicked in his mother's door? Well, I mean, you could make the argument it's not very like Louis to hang a guy on the gates of a park, too. But
right. And I think maybe part of that is to show the escalation of what's happening within Louis. You know, he's raging inside, and eventually it's going to come to a head, which it does with the alderman. You know, he's had enough. He's heard enough of this guy's thoughts. He knows exactly what an asshole he is. He knows that they've set him up from Jump Street. And he is done.
Well, okay.
And he wants to scare the shit out of him, too. He wants to scare that man.
Why doesn't he also gut Tom at this point? I mean, I'm glad he doesn't, because I like the scene with Tom in the season
finale. Well, I think it's because Tom is useful.
Ah, he's still using Tom, and Tom still will play ball with him in different ways. That makes sense,
yeah.
I suppose. But you know, I mean, to use the meme that is often used online these days, men... they'll gut an alderman and start a race riot rather than go to therapy.
It's very true. You could do it online now, guys. Come on.
And I love Louis. Listen, Louis is lying to himself and to Lestat, even in this slanted version that he's telling to Daniel. He says, I didn't do it for me. And then Lestat clearly points out, the only one that's benefited from this is you. You're aware of this, right?
Right.
Like, who did you do it for exactly? My people. The ones that are being burned and killed in the streets right now.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly what you caused to happen.
The very ending in this episode is interesting. He is describing, well, first of all, we're seeing him stumble through the streets trying to help someone. No one seems to be in need of his help, really, or helpable. And then he
What can you do? What do you think you can do right now?
That's the thing. It's like, it reminds me of the memes, again, to talk about Batman. Yeah, go punch poor people. That's the way to help, you know, the crime in Gotham.
Like, what the fuck are you trying to do?
You start a charity, Louis?
You got a hose? You got a bucket of water?
But he says here, my light, my Claudia, my redemption. That's how he finishes the episode. And I was just very struck with that. And I want to talk about this a little bit. Does Louis still truly see her as his redemption? Does he see making her as a redemptive act for himself, you know, in 2020?
I think that I don't think he sees it as redemptive, like making her or saving her, air quotes. I think I was teaching her and growing with her and staying with her,
staying with her
when he wanted to leave. That feels redemptive to him.
Ah.
And then she was taken from him.
But see, okay, all right. We talk about Lestat as the brat all the time, but Louis is such a bitch because here again, this is selfish. Like the very concept of this woman existing for his redemption, and what we mean by that, or what we think he means by that, is that like kept me alive and kept me going. I was at a very desperate moment in my life, and now I lived for Claudia for a little while.
Well, and it kept me from continuing down this very angry, destructive, dark path I was on.
Yeah. But yeah. Again, like, that's not what people are for, friend.
No. Unlike what we see in television movies, women are not just there to make life interesting for men.
Hey, you guys know what? I think these vampires are bad guys.
I don't know. They might be assholes, Joel.
Are we
the baddies? Do we like bad guys, Joel? Is this a problem we may have had?
Listen, we're both Hannibal fans. Yes, the answer is we like bad guys.
True.
We like bad guys.
We've got bad taste sometimes.
They're very interesting. I'll say that, though. That's what we like. That's what we continue to like. They are very interesting. Ashley, let's talk for a second here about the news that came out this week. I'm going to pull up this. There was an announcement this week for a new addition to Mayfair Witches Season 2. Ben Feldman has joined the cast.
A character that doesn't matter a bit.
Yeah, that's what I wanted
Brand
to talk
new character?
To. And honestly, I want to point it out here just because, again, it continues to show the differences between, you know, a great adaptation and one that is not just subpar, but is off the rails in the wrong direction. Ben Feldman from Superstore and Mad Men, he's joined the cast of AMC's series Anne Rice's Mayfair Witches for Season 2 in a series regular role. He's going to portray Sam Lark Larkin, a successful CEO of a genetic startup, and Rowan's former boyfriend who has re-entered her life. First of all, that sort of implies that there's a bit of a time jump between Season 1 and Season 2. And if there's a time jump and Lasher isn't a grown-ass man, I'm very upset.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, if he's not a grown-ass man within 10 minutes of that first episode, I'm going to be pretty fucking annoyed.
What are you doing? And like, we've already seen, they've cast several Mayfair women, which we speculated before. Hey, maybe they're doing the thing where in the books, again, this is a spoiler for the books, but like, Lasher is trying to repopulate his species. He's trying to make more like him. And the Mayfair women seem to be the conduit to do that. But you can't do that if he's a baby and she's got other boyfriends. Like, what are you doing? Are they gonna clone Lasher? Is that what they're working on? Like, why bring this guy in at all?
I'm just still confused that there's not Michael in any way, form, or fashion. Still yet, nothing. But we're going to introduce ex-boyfriend that we don't even know, that isn't a real character, that has a stupid nickname?
Yeah, like, what are you doing? What are you doing? She's already got a love.
They're pissing us off.
Yeah, anyway. this is not, okay, Tom Anderson doesn't exist in the interview series, but they don't use Tom Anderson to drive the narrative in a different direction than where the narrative goes.
Exactly.
They use Tom Anderson.
It's like a new character
Alderman.
That you added to add nuance and interest and help create conflict in a different way.
Well, but they also, they use the Alderman and Tom Anderson specifically to be like a shortcut for 10 people in the novel over the course of the 40 years that they live in New Orleans, you know, like that.
Right.
Anyway, there are ways to shortcut things for television adaptation that makes sense. You know, I think, and this goes for film too. Like, you think about the character of Jamis is a lot bigger in the Dune novel than he is in the film adaptation from Denis Villeneuve. But like, they don't direct that into a whole. Anyway, it's a shame.
Yeah.
And more than one of us in the Facebook group has made mention of this. Yes, the showrunners are different, but the executive producers and the folks in charge at AMC and overall of the Immortal Universe are the same. And this is why anytime anyone says anything about the Talamasca series, or even honestly the future of this series, I worry. Because so far, they're only batting 50%.
Well, my hope and dream is that we consider the Talamasca house in New Orleans as like the bastard stepchild. And we were going to carry on in London like the classy motherfuckers we are.
Yes, I am 100% with that hope. But that would make me happy about the Mayfair series if they come out and introduce us to a bunch of British people in season two and they are very disdainful of the New Orleans Talamasca.
Yes.
I'll be like, okay, I'm all right. Good for you.
God, I just remembered all that stupid shit with the Talamasca.
There's so much worthlessness in that. So much worthlessness in that show. They're spending a lot of money on it.
We have to watch it.
Yeah, we're gonna have to watch it.
We gotta watch that second scene. Second season. Shit.
Listen. There's so much good TV coming in the near future, though, and there are so many fantastic films out right now. Like, I was literally looking at my lineup of things that are available on streaming. I don't even own any of these, but like, I've got Oppenheimer that I still haven't watched, which is on Peacock, I think. I've got Poor Things, which is on Hulu right now. I've got Spaceman, the new Sandler movie, which is on Netflix. May December is on Netflix as well. And there was one other one that I was... Oh, Napoleon is on Apple TV now from Ridley Scott. So, like, I've got a lot of award-winning movies to get to. There's a ton of great TV coming out this year. I want
to... And we have to watch Mayfair Season 2.
Yeah, well, we'll get there when we get there. But it's not getting any better. That's what I'm just preparing you all for. So those of you that don't have a podcast about this show, let me suggest to you that you can skip it and listen to our recaps, and you'll can be mad about the right things without having to actually waste your hour on it. I do want to say, Ashley, we've talked about some of the things that we're reading in the past. I mentioned Dune, the film adaptation. I am rereading the novel right now in an audio form. There's a great audiobook on Audible. I'm sure it's available other places too. But it is read by our favorite Simon Vance, who did the vast majority of the Vampire Chronicles. But the cool thing about this one is, and in the Vampire Chronicle adaptations that he did, he would voice all the characters as well. He'd just narrate the whole thing. But this is more fully acted. All of the leads have a separate actor that voices all of their dialogue. So you get into a scene and Simon Vance does all the narration, but then Duke, Leto, and Paul are speaking to each other. It's two separate actors standing there talking to each other. And it's wonderful. Really, really well done. Very captivating so far. If you've never read that, or if it's been a long time since you read it, can't recommend that audiobook enough.
That.
It's good. It's like 20 hours long. It's a load. The following books, Dune Messiah and Children of Dune and The God Emperor Dune is number 4. Those are not nearly as long. I think most of those are like in the 300 or 400 page area. But this first one is quite a haul. They got a lot of stuff to get to. I don't know. They made 2 movies out of it. I don't know if you know that.
Wow. I started the Crown of Thrones and Roses or whatever that series is.
Yes. Yes.
I finally got around to that. I'm about an hour into the audiobook, and I was like, is this fucking Beauty and the Beast? I think it is.
Nothing wrong with that. And
Nothing wrong with it. I'm having a great time.
As Our Lady Anne knows, actually opens you. Well, no, she did Sleeping Beauty, right? Not Beauty and the Beast. Yes. She did Sleeping Beauty, but not. That's a different fairy tale. Anyway, fairy tales are rife for some sexy remakes. So
it's very true.
Get up to it. All right. The next time we talk together, we will be discussing episode 4 of season 1, and we'll see whether our sexy bad boys can become parents.
Daddies. Zaddies.
I'm super excited, in lieu of this talk of unreliable narrators and what is the truth of the story, I'm super excited to get to Claudia's episode specifically, where she is our lead voice. We get to read into her diaries. That's coming up just a few more down the road. So stick with us and come back for that. This rewatch continuing. Hey, I just want to say a quick thank you, by the way, to everybody that is watching and listening to the show on YouTube. We're getting some comments there, Ashley. I don't know if I've even, I need to send you the link so you can go read the comments on occasion, but
that would be awesome. I would love that.
I've had more than one person say, "Hey, I so appreciate you putting up these up here. I don't do social media, so I've never been able to talk to you guys, but now I can tell you."
Oh, that's awesome.
I
need to get over there.
Yeah. So, and the interesting thing too, and I'm going to try to do this as we go through, on our initial watch, some of those episodes have a question or a comment that we can bring up here as we go through and rewatch and discuss those episodes. So we'll do that too.
Until I always forget time. Where all we are.
Yeah, right. Well, anywhere you listen to podcasts, you can find us there. And if there's somewhere you'd like us to be that you can't find us, let me know and I'll try to make that happen too. Ashley, you got anything before we wrap up this week?
No, just thanks for listening.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for participating in our conversations, and tell your friends.
That's right. That's right. We'd love more folks to join the coven. Until next week, we've been your hosts. I'm Joel.
I'm Ashley.
And we are the Articulate Coven. Thanks for listening to The Articulate Coven. You can join our community on Facebook by following the links in the show notes or searching for Articulate Coven on Facebook. You can subscribe to the show in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or at articulatecoven.com. And share us with your Anne Rice-loving friends.